If we're funding this type of research in a place like Wuhan, China, where we know that the CCP military is working hand in glove with all those scientists, I mean, this whole thing is a national security issue. And that's the questions they should have been asking Dr. Fauci today.
In this episode, I sit down with Republican Senator Dr. Roger Marshall, an obstetrician and gynecologist from Kansas, to get his take on gain-of-function research, the origins of the virus, and Dr. Anthony Fauci's recent testimony before the House Select Subcommittee on the Coronavirus Pandemic.
Somebody's lying here. It's either Dr. Fauci or David Morenz. I think we should put some type of term limits on people in high positions, whether it's the FBI, the CDC, NIAID director, that they just accumulate too much power.
This is American Thought Leaders, and I'm Yanya Kelik. Senator Roger Marshall, such a pleasure to have you on American Thought Leaders.
Y'all, we're going to have a great discussion today. I've been looking forward to this for weeks.
Well, absolutely. And I just, you know, cut out a little bit early from the hearing where Dr. Anthony Fauci was testifying about COVID origins and some other things, as it turns out. I guess we managed to get about an hour and a half of the hearing in. What are your reactions?
Yeah. Well, look, y'all, somebody's lying. Somebody's lying here. It's either Dr. Fauci or David Morenz. Somebody is lying. You know, first of all, Fauci once again lies that we were not funding, we, the United States, was not funding gain-of-function research when the NIH, the State Department, experts in the field all said we were funding gain-of-function research in Wuhan, China, and Fauci still can't look the camera in the eye and admit to that. And then he says that Morenz is lying, that he did not participate in any of these cover-up, and you know, he's distancing himself. You can see Fauci very clearly trying to distance himself from David Morenz's testimony. Even though he's been his number one assistant for 20 years, suddenly he's not a direct report anymore. Somebody out there is lying.
So, you know, one of the things, you wrote an op-ed, which we ran in the Epoch Times on Sunday. You assert that he must have known about bioweapons development in China. And so this is something that struck me here, because he's on record now saying, were you ever briefed that the U.S. State by the U.S. State Department in 2005 issued warnings that the Chinese government was working on the creation of bioweapons? He says, I was not aware of that. Another one, did you ever discuss the Chinese bioweapons program with anyone in the intelligence community? He says, I never discussed the Chinese bioweapons program, to my knowledge, with anybody.
I think it's his responsibility to know. And if he doesn't, then shame on him. He has, you know, he has two roles right now that he's being paid for. He's being paid for as the chief medical officer advisor, head of the NIAID for the president. But additionally, he's the chief biodefense for the civilian world, the chief civilian biodefense person as well. He's getting paid a salary to do that. How could he not know? I mean, this has been well-sourced knowledge since at least the 1990s, what Russia and China were doing from a biosecurity offensive weapon. So I don't know how anybody at his level of the government wouldn't know this. So if he doesn't, then shame on him.
What do you make of the overall questioning?
What we need to be focusing on is the process, that the processes that he didn't follow through and the processes that are absolutely missing. You know, beyond Dr. Fauci, we need to be talking about what we need to do as a government in this world of gain-of-function research. Gain-of-function research is code for bioweapon research. It really is the same thing. This is not two different issues. So we need to focus on why isn't national security in on these decisions where we're doing grants? Why are we funding gain-of-function research with our adversaries, these countries? Why are we letting scientists from these countries of concern into our laboratories as well? Could you imagine if I walked in here and said, we just sent our best nuclear scientists to Iran and to North Korea yesterday. And they're over here too in our lab. Their scientists are in our lab. But for some reason with this gain of function research, people can't make the visual. And they don't understand that even though there's not a bomb going off, that gain of function research has resulted in 100 times, maybe 1,000 times more deaths than nuclear bombs ever did. So we need to put it in that perspective. You know, where's the national security emphasis of this? And it's very clear, if we're funding this type of research in a place like Wuhan, China, where we know that the CCP military is working hand in glove with all those scientists, I mean, for crying out loud, the CCP labs are making the fentanyl precursors. researchers that come over here. It's not like in America where you have Kansas State's research laboratory over here, and then the Fort Detrick's research laboratory over here. They're all in the same place. So we need to bring in this national security issue into all these grants that we're funding.
Just if you can clarify for me, you said that bioweapons research has resulted in, I think you said, 1,000 times more deaths than nuclear bombs. And just can you clarify, explain that to me a little bit?
Yeah. Well, I think that COVID-19 is a result of gain of function in the potential to be a biosecurity weapon. You know, why are they making a virus that's this horrific, that sticks to human lung cells like glue? It was very specifically designed. They could say, oh, we were going to make a vaccine for it. But I just don't see why you'd be making this particular virus, which doesn't occur in nature, for the purpose of making a vaccine out of it. I can't make that connection. And that's the problem with gain-of-function research. What we'd like to outlaw is anything that's being made for a bad purpose. You know, Fauci in his comments today, it's crazy. He's saying, oh, if you expand the gain-of-function definition, we couldn't do research on a flu vaccine. What a horrible lie that is to tell the American public. That's not true at all. Mm.
Well, yeah. So they would, of course, say that it's all about kind of preparing for future pandemics, right? So, well, two points, right? One is, of course, there's this doctrine of military-civil fusion, right, in China.
Yes.
So, anything with the potential for a military potential has this kind of requirement that there is, I guess, cooperation or at least conversation about the potentials. And we know that, of course, the Chinese military was working in the Wuhan lab, and that's known as a fact. I suspect someone like Dr. Anthony Fauci would say, well, because we don't know what's going to happen in the future. We have no idea, right? So we're going to go in the lab. We're going to tweak things to make them highly infectious to humans so we can create the countermeasures. And that way, on the one side, we're protecting against random mutations. On the other side, we're figuring out how we can deal with potential bioweapons that are deployed against us. That's what they say. So they would say, well, there's nothing bad about this, right?
Yeah, so as a physician, I'm always saying they're balancing the benefit to the risk. Mm-hmm. So for 30 years, they've been saying, if you allow us to do this research, we'll develop a vaccine that's going to save the Earth. And they're 0 for 30 years so far. But in the process, we've had multiple lab leaks, right? Even lab leaks here in the United States from our gain-of-function research as well for decades. That's why the Obama administration shut down gain-of-function research, but somehow Fauci's always found a way around it, was because of our own lab leaks. So I understand the potential gain, but until you put the proper guardrails around it, the downside is just too horrible right now. And again, why would we be over there teaching them how to do this? I mean, let's back up. Ralph Baric at North Carolina taught Dr. Shi how to do the protein spike. He then gave her the humanized mice that could use had the ACE2 receptors as well. He taught them how to do this. Now, I trusted Dr. Ralph Baric, a good professor, teacher, scientist from North Carolina, but we're in bed with the enemy right now. We're sleeping with the enemy, and I don't trust him. I remember President Reagan, trust but verify. This doesn't apply just to nuclear weapons. This whole thing is a national security issue. We have to trust but verify. EcoHealth was just a funneling mechanism, money. We gave EcoHealth $150 million or some 20 years preceding COVID, and they're funneling it different directions, but they have no scientists at the WIB. They have no idea what they were doing there, and I think that's breaking the law, too. I think the law says, the grant requirements say, you have to have proper control of what's going on, eyes on. That's the questions they should have been asking Dr. Fauci today. Dr. Fauci, did USAID have anybody there in Wuhan supervising, participating in this? No. The answer was no, nobody, nothing. And even after this epidemic explodes, we can't get researchers in there to do any research. They won't give us the DNA virus. Dr. Fauci, what was the upside of doing research with Wuhan, China right now? There's no upside to this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you were already in 2020, starting to ask questions. And I guess, you're very passionate about this issue. Is this what you were already thinking? What were you thinking back in 2020?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it seems like forever ago, but it was yesterday. I read 2 or 3 hours every day. I'm very intellectually curious. Early January, the first week of January, I read about this novel virus in China. And I'm a physician. I'm sitting there thinking, I immediately think to my mind about SARS and MERS and Ebola. And I thought, SARS was in China, and what did China do then? They obfuscated from the very beginning. They underestimated. They didn't share with anybody where it came from, what was going on as well. And I said, holy cow, you know, I'm not just responsible for my OB patients anymore. I'm the congressman from Kansas. I'm running for Senate. I have a big responsibility. I better look into this. So the next thing I do is I start researching what's in Wuhan, China. A BSL, a biosecurity level 4 lab in Wuhan, China. What are the chances? And then you could just tell already that China was hiding. Well, what were they hiding? Why wouldn't they just give us the DNA sequence? And then all of a sudden, through different doctors reaching out to me saying, something's up, something's up. You know, we can't get information out of China. And all of a sudden, China is saying, there's no human-to-human transmission. Like, wow. You know, by the end of January, we got people in Thailand, Japan, Taiwan with this virus, but there's no human-to-human transmission. That made no sense to me as well. There's an article, I think, in the Wall Street Journal that says, don't worry, we have CDC scientists in Wuhan looking into this. I get the CDC on the phone and say, what are you guys finding? Well, we've got scientists in China, but they're not in Wuhan. They won't let us within 1,000 miles of it. So they lied. They had scientists in China. That's like saying you're reviewing a hurricane in Florida and you sent your scientists to Washington State or something, right? So it just never added up to me. You know, you've done these stories like this. You kept looking for a dead end, but I bet you on every time you dove into something, didn't you find 4 more open doors that say, oh, you need to look here, and I'm still there. Every time I, you know, peel back a layer of this onion, and there's more there. It just never ends.
Well, so, you know, this is one of the things that's come out. We, of course, published a documentary, I think it was April of 2020, where we tried to put together kind of what we knew. What was the more likely scenario? I mean, that was really kind of the question that we were asking, given all the information that was available by that point. I think we did have the sequence at that point, and there's this, you know, suspicious furin cleavage site that you don't find in such viruses, and that typically you used for to facilitate human transmission. Anyway, it's a we put it all together in a basic way. I think it's aged incredibly well. What have we discovered since that time? What do we know? Like, maybe you can outline a few of the sort of the key, most important facts.
Yeah, you know, like you, I was making my timelines and my theories back in April, May of that year as well. People can go to marshall.senate.gov and see a 15-minute video we did on the timeline several years ago. I would just talk through what I call the smoking guns. It was a great time to talk about that. Things that you and I were postulating then, I think most importantly is that we've proven them and we've added more pieces to it, okay? When I think about 7-8 smoking guns that would show that this virus was made by a laboratory in Wuhan and leaked there as well, I don't think it was purposely released. I think that would be that not even China, the CCP would do that. But we already mentioned just the geography. What are the questions of this virus showing up next to a BSL level 4 laboratory? In April, you and I are sitting there wondering about an intermediate animal yet, an intermediate species. And it was only 4 months into it, but here we are 4 years later and there's no intermediate species. Remind your listeners that CRSARS was about 2002, something like that, 2002. It took them like 4 or 5 months to find the civet cat that was the intermediate species. So the virus went from the bats to the civet cat and then to humans. In the MERS epidemic of 2012, it was the camel. So we still don't have this intermediate host. The next smoking gun is a progenitor. China could have easily have shown some type of progenitor, the father, the grandfather, the great uncle of this virus as it emerged from a bat into humans. They should have had an intermediate host and they should have found all these sequences. But the next smoking gun, well, Dr. Shi, of course, took down her viral DNA laboratory in September of 2019, which is why I believe there was actually 2 leaks from the laboratory, the first one in September of 2019. And then next, she destroys all these virus samples. The 8 viruses that were probably closest to the backbone of COVID-19, she destroyed those as well. Now we found out also that they were doing research on a vaccine in November of 2019. So you and I probably didn't know that in April. I don't think I figured that out till later as well. So and then Just since then, the number of people that have mysteriously died that knew something about this, they jailed CCP, jailed journalists, they jailed physicians and scientists, and certainly some had some very suspicious ends to their lives as well. So I think all these little pieces of the puzzle, and just talk just for a second about the DNA sequence of this. And you have a molecular biology background, and so help me communicate this effectively. We mentioned the protein spike, very unique to this project, right? The protein spike. You mentioned the furin cleavage site. It's not in this type of virus. And then lastly, no one's talking about this, but there's a sequence upstream from the furin cleavage site. It's called QT-QTN. And that's what shuts down your immune system. So we didn't know that then. We didn't know how this virus worked. So those are pieces. And then the other thing I would add we didn't know then was the diffuse lab application, the grant application to the DOD. So this diffuse grant from EcoHealth basically requested money to do what ends up being the COVID-19 project. I mean, what are the chances?
You describe all these different smoking guns, but I think the diffuse proposal seems to be the would be the big one, because it almost is like a blueprint on how one would create such a virus and so forth. Let's go back to the hearing that's happening today. So what would you hope can come from the work of this the select committee on the coronavirus?
Again, we got to stop making it so personal with Dr. Fauci and focus on what we need to do to correct the system. And I think that's what's missing in the questions. Mm-hmm. Look, when this virus broke out, we had a plan for a pandemic. Asper, the assistant HHS secretary, Dr. Bob Cadillac, should have been leading the charge on this. We had a plan to respond to a pandemic. Dr. Robert Redfield, maybe the wisest man I have met in decades. Those two get pushed to the side, and Fauci, instead of asking advice from scientists within the government, he reaches out to his gain-of-function mafia. If you think about the people he should have been reaching out to, a couple organizations in the government. One is NBIC, and that's the Bioscience Intelligence Community within the agency within the government. And the other one is the NCMI, which is the medical intelligence within the government. He should have been reaching out to the FBI. In his testimony today, someone asked him, who should have he reached out to? I would have reached out to all. The State Department had incredible incriminating evidence, but even before January 1st, 2020, on what was going on in China, all these suspicious happenings going on in the city, and the city becomes, during the military games, becomes vacant, a whole bunch of just coincidental pieces of the puzzle. But instead, Fauci centralizes it, and he consults with his viral gain-of-function mafia, the people that were going to get $2 billion of grants over a 2 years time frame. Their institutions got $2 billion worth of grants from Anthony Fauci, NIH, the federal government as well. So why did he reach out to those people rather than their proper channels?
Well, he actually responded to that, I believe, in the testimony today, right? He said he asked them to convene a group of evolutionary biologists to assess this, the veracity, the significance of this furin cleavage site.
This is the February 1st meeting, and before that, who were the people? Christian Anderson and Eddie Holmes had came to Dr. Fauci, two premier virologists in the world studying this, and said, we think that this came from the laboratory. This is right before February the 1st. And Fauci says, okay, and let's convene this meeting. In a matter of days, he flips the whole script. Just a week after that meeting, Fauci is on a podcast, on Newt Gingrich podcast, and who's he got with him? Peter Daszak, of all people, are on there saying, oh, there's no way that this could have come from a laboratory. So to me, again, just this whole trail of crumbs saying, my gosh, why is Fauci so motivated to hide this? Why doesn't he even give it the possibility this could have came from a laboratory?
So something you mentioned in your op-ed that's relevant to this meeting that you just described is the Federal Advisory Committee Act, and this is something you want, specifically targeted in discussions with Fauci or elsewhere. Explain that to me.
Yeah. So this Federal Advisory Act says, if someone in the government is seeking counsel, they need to do it very transparently, as well as being people that aren't prejudiced, they don't have a conflict of interest, and this is exactly the opposite of what Dr. Fauci did. instead of, you know, going to the government agencies I talked about, the intelligence community, the State Department, the DOD, instead he went to these people that are beholden unto him, people that he literally was giving billions of dollars of grants to in total. He didn't follow the process. If I learned one thing as a physician, whether it's a cord prolapse or a placental abruption, you know, have a plan and go at it the same way every time. So they just dodged the plan completely for some reason. Our response to a pandemic was dodged.
One thing that seemed to be clear to me looking at this testimony that was happening, or this hearing in general, was that there seems to be a bipartisan interest in holding Dr. Morenz and Dr. Daszak accountable for something. That I don't know if you read it that way as well as I did, but it seems like that. But in general, aside from, you know, accountability, you have to make sure that this sort of situation doesn't happen again. How do we do that? Yeah. I mean,
my reflection on the hearing today is we took two steps back, and you brought this out. This turned into a more of a partisan hearing, where the Democrats are basically applauding Lord Fauci and the Republicans trying to find somebody accountable. The last hearing more agreed that David Morenz is the culprit here, and Peter Daszak and EcoHealth are the culprit here, and I think there's been a very concerted effort by the insiders at NIH to throw those two under the bus. I absolutely think that that's what's going on here. It is so hard to walk away from the politics, and I don't get this. I get so frustrated. To me, this is about health. It's the health of millions of people. A million Americans have died. We have 10, 15,000 Americans with long COVID that are incapacitated right now, and we still don't have all the truth. You know, if an airplane wrecks, we go to great length to find out why, how come. So we need a 9/11 style, deep, a full-throated forensic investigation. Take the investigation out of D.C., for crying out loud. Let's get the politics out of it. Take it to Kansas. Take it somewhere else and do a full-throated forensic investigation of this and see and learn from our mistakes. And then I think the ideas that we're throwing around are different types of legislation. Legislation number one is NIAID needs its own inspector general. Okay, they don't have an inspector general. Next, in all the grant process, they need to bring in national security. I think we should put some type of term limits on people like Dr. Fauci, people in high positions, whether it's the FBI, the CDC, NIAID director, that they just accumulate too much power. Not even admitting to the problems with this 6-foot social distancing. My gosh, I called the CDC on that live when they issued that. I said, show me the studies. They sent me almost 100 studies. I went through every one of them, and the only study even close to having anything to do with this was a 1930s article on tuberculosis, which talked about how far the tuberculin bacteria would spew when you coughed or your spit. And considering that is like versus this COVID virus is like considering not an apple to an orange, but an apple to a watermelon, that the tuberculin particle is so big. The mask mandate's the same thing. They sent me articles on mask mandate, probably 100 of them. 80 of them said the mask didn't matter. 10% of them said it made it worse, which I believe that. And then 10% said maybe it helps, but they weren't peer reviewed. There was no science. I get pretty frustrated when a physician presents something as dogma when it's really theory and just this lack of humbleness to say, I need consultations, I need help. And the solution that's going to work in New York City may be different than what's going to work in my home of Great Bend, Kansas.
Talking about conflicts of interest, this is something you mentioned that need to be dealt with. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the revelations recently is that it's about $700 million of royalties went to NIH scientists. This is Adam Andrzejewski over at OpenTheBooks.com. Dr. Fauci was asked about this. He said that he had gotten zero of that. What do you think about this idea of large amounts of royalties? This is just during the COVID era, I guess.
Right. So, yeah. So first of all, we've discussed this for months at my office, and there's a solution to it. Look, these researchers, scientists need to list royalties. And I'm not sure where or how, but much like I have to report every investment I make as a senator, these folks that are that work for the federal government, they get royalties or anything close to what you would call a royalty that you or your family members are getting. It is that simple. We need a law that says that. I don't want any wiggle room. So we're going to, I think we're getting the lawyers involved now to take the concept and then put it into some type of writing. You know, that idea, we need inspector generals at the USAID. We need royalties, public transparency. You just can't shine enough light on this stuff, evidently.
Well, so talking about shining light, what about the FOIA process?
Yeah. So how do we put teeth to it? I'm just baffled that from day one, we as Congress have asked for paper, have asked for information. We even passed a law that Biden signed asking to declassify lots of this information, and they still haven't gotten it to us. This is the swamp up here in D.C., that there are federal officials, bureaucrats like Fauci that have more power and control than a United States senator does. And I think I go back to the term limits issue. It goes way beyond just writing laws. There needs to be some house cleaning up here. I couldn't be more frustrated.
You're saying it has to be something more than just passing laws and there has to be some house cleaning. But what does that look like, I guess? I'm curious.
I think it looks like a Donald Trump up here kicking ass and taking names and just saying the end of this. I do think that term limits at a certain level in the federal government will help, but it's going to take some very brave congressmen and senators to stand up to these people and start clipping their budgets one way or another. And I would just tell you this. I know we have people up here concerned about the size of the Chinese Navy. I have more concern about their cyber attacks, their biosecurity attacks, those things you can't see than I do the size of their Navy. I think it's very real. And that's why we have a BSL-4 laboratory at Kansas State University right now, is to try to be prepared for some of those biosecurity attacks. It's quite a challenge. I mean, what we're seeing right now with the highly contagious avian flu going across the country right now, we found it in dairies in Kansas. There's two or three, we're up to three humans now that have it as well. Where did that virus come from? Why is it suddenly acting meaner? I'm very suspicious, but it does take a scientific response at some level to try to battle it. It's a great question, though.
The blueprints to making it avian flu more transmissible to humans actually were published, I think, back in 2012 or 2014. I don't remember exactly, but that was actually the reason for this, gain of function moratorium or with caveats, gain of function moratorium with caveats, as we learned subsequently in the first place. So, I mean, it seems to be out there.
Yeah,
right? Like
it
how
is.
To make it. That scares me a lot.
It should.
To know that people were publishing things like this. So let's talk about the national security side, collaborations with communist China on, gain of function research would be one example. I think you've made your case pretty clear on that, but just in general, in biotechnology, and frankly, other types of technology which has military potential.
I'm done. Mm-hmm. I'm absolutely done. I came to Congress with an open mind. Think about what China does here. They steal $500 billion worth of intellectual property from us every year. They don't respect intellectual property. If you discover oil in your backyard, they think it's theirs. It's just a different philosophy. So I don't trust him a bit.
Well, there was, it's interesting that you say that, but there's this, I remember Secretary of State Pompeo back in the day had this maxim. He said, distrust and verify, right? It's sort of a play
that's
on
even better.
A play on trust but verify, right? From Ronald Reagan back in the day. But if you see the same pattern again and again, you sort of have to kind of assume that might be the pattern next. Is that what you're getting at?
You got it. Why would you you don't do business with someone that was dishonest with you before? Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Just the bigger picture here. 90% of the counterfeits that come into this country are made in China. 90% of the fentanyl precursors made in CCP labs coming into this country as well. We mentioned the intellectual property theft. The cyber attacks. I said in these financial institutions and see the cyber attacks coming over more than a dozen per second. They're all coming from four or five, actually two or three countries, from Russia and China and typically North Korea. What else do we need to see here? Why would we cooperate with them?
So, as we finish up, you mentioned term limits for for government bureaucrats. What about for congressional members?
Absolutely. I'm all for it. It's one of the first things I signed up for. But it wouldn't be fair for Kansas to have term limits and the other states not. That's my caveat is. But if there was ever an opportunity to vote for that, we could argue, you know, a senator probably two terms, is a House three or four, I don't know. But I would be all for it.
Okay. Any final thoughts as we actually finish?
Until someone can convince me that it's safe, America needs to, at a very minimum, stop funding gain-of-function research, which I think is much more dangerous than nuclear bombs are at this point in time. We should stop funding it with adversaries. We shouldn't be giving them any more of our technology. And to a point that, from a conversation you and I had earlier, though, is if they're going to continue their research, we have to figure out where and what we're going to do here so that they don't get ahead of us. So I acknowledge that. But it's going to take some very thoughtful people to put the proper guardrails around how we're going to do that research. But we cannot be doing this research with our adversaries.
Well, Senator Roger Marshall, it's such a pleasure to have had you on.
I enjoyed it, Jan. Thank you.
Thank you all for joining Senator Roger Marshall and me on this episode of American Thought Leaders. I'm your host, Yanya Kelek.